Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women Leading the Way Radio Show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today. Well, good morning, everyone. I want to thank all of our listeners listening in on Monday, October 8th, which is Columbus Day. This is the Women Leading the Way radio show hosted by Connected Women of Influence. I'm Michelle Berquist, your host this morning, and our leading lady today is Cecilia Chen, who is an attorney at law, who's going to be here talking with us about the good, the bad, and the ugly of bankruptcy. Oh, Cecilia, is this like a hot topic or what?
Absolutely, especially in the times that we're in right now.
Totally. I want to say thank you for kind of coming on board, because I know this is such a sensitive topic. And, you know, again, just from the standpoint of talking to women business owners and women in business, it just seems to me one of those things that you just don't talk about, you know. And, right. And if you don't mind, just because before we get into the whole thing of bankruptcy, it's like I'd love to know, because you, first of all, you need to know this is one woman who packs a wallop. She's like little, she's teeny, but this girl, Cecilia, just packs a wallop in the legal field. So, knowing you, it's like, give us a little bit about your background. I mean, how did you get into the practice of law? I'm curious.
Let's see. In college, I actually majored in finance, but I've always been drawn to writing and, speaking up. And I don't mean to get into debates, but end up getting into debates with people when I have, you know, when I feel differently about certain topics. So the idea of becoming an attorney was, you know, suggested by a lot of people. And I thought about it, but, you know, I wasn't entirely sure. So I became, after college, instead of pursuing my finance degree, I went to work for a major national law firm and was working as a paralegal. And just wanted to know if I enjoyed the practice of law, which I did. And a year later, I applied to law school and was admitted to American University in D.C. And I really enjoyed the 3 years of law school. And, you know, to this day, over a decade later, I still really enjoy the practice of law, the work, the industry. I graduated in 2004, worked for a firm in Virginia. And then I moved to San Diego in early 2007, joined another firm, practiced for about a year, a little over a year at that firm, and then started my own practice in 2008. And I've been on my own since. And
wow.
What
made you jump on your own? I mean, that's a big step, going from a
big
firm and then kind of branching out.
Right. There are a lot of factors. So one of the main factors was that I wanted to build my own clientele. And with the hours that I was working at the large firm I was with, it's not feasible. I mean, unless I'm literally working and doing, you know, networking 24/7, it wasn't feasible. And want to spend time with my family, it wasn't feasible for me to really do any networking and meeting other people and, build my own client base. And also my firm wasn't very flexible in terms of working with smaller business owners. The firm I was with, they have a very large retainer requirement, retainer deposit requirement, and the fees are also very high.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of out of touch with, you know, it's not feasible for most small business owners to be able to have, you know, quality legal services, but, you know, at that kind of high cost. So I felt like there's definitely a need out there, combined with my need of wanting to build my own client base and to work with, you know, startup small business owners, but, you know, providing very quality legal service as my background and experience have, but at a very reasonable and affordable cost.
And, you know, you're saying all that, and, you know, you and I have known each other for a while, and you're a member of Connected Women of Influence, and I have to tell you, and I think you know this, but, you know, you're one of the members that I just continue to hear great feedback on about the quality of, you know, just how you've helped some of our members and, you know, the conversations on legal issues. And, again, the woman who, quote-unquote, gets it, because you do. You definitely give, and, you know, and that, I hope, is starting to come full circle back around for you, which is what our group is about. But,
sure.
That's all good. But here's the scoop. We're going to talk about the big B, the big bankruptcy, because this is the one thing I hear from women so often right now. Well, number one, it's a taboo subject. Nobody wants to talk about it except, you know, behind closed doors, secret coffers, right? You know, and then it's such a personal thing.
Right.
Yeah, and that's why I wanted to kind of unpack some of it today. I mean, so share with me and with our listeners, what are some of the things that you see that are just so, not frustrating, but you just want to go, my gosh, why don't people act on or ask these questions earlier? I mean, what are some of those things that you see that you might be able to share with people listening in that are thinking, you know, should I file for bankruptcy? What should I consider? And then we'll go deeper in questions, but gosh, you know, what do people approach you on that just, you just go, man, this should be more public information.
Right. Well, the biggest misconception about bankruptcy is that, you know, people think they're going to lose everything they have worked for, which is absolutely not true. The law, every state law, and California has very generous laws on protecting certain assets that people have. And the goal is to not leave people with nothing or homeless after filing for bankruptcy. The bankruptcy is an option that exists for people to use in order to start fresh. It's not designed as a punishment, particularly with retirement assets. Retirement assets are absolutely, completely protected in bankruptcy. And a lot of folks do not know that. And or even if they do know, they're overcome with the shame of even finding out about, you know, the option, so that they keep, you know, taking the money out of retirement accounts to repay debts that can easily be discharged and canceled in bankruptcy. And by the time, you know, they realize there isn't much left and they still have to file bankruptcy, by that time, there's very little retirement left.
You know,
that's really unfortunate, because I've come across that for several of my clients. By the time they come to see me, they have already drained their retirement savings in paying off debts. You know, and sometimes perhaps it is something that can be done and for people to avoid bankruptcy. But at the same time, you know, when you have to dip into a large portion of your savings, that's really a time for you to think about, is this the right thing for me to do? Put the shame or whatnot aside. Is that the right business? If my finances is a business, would that be the right thing for me to do?
But I think that's where, Cecilia, this is what I've seen with people, and this is one of the reasons I wanted to have this as a show today, and the topic of it is that, you know, I mean, I see the stress on different small business owners and women that it's like, I know, and it's like, you know, they have so many questions. It's like, you know, what about this? What about that? And then the other big one, and I want you to address this one, is if you remember quite a few years back, it's like they changed the bankruptcy laws. And I think that's what's almost impeding people as well, is they think, oh, I'm not going to qualify to be able to file for bankruptcy. Can you address that? Because that's what I've heard from people as well.
It's absolutely not true. In 2005, the law changed to prevent people from abusing the bankruptcy law. Folks who have very high net worth or net income, you know, and they rack up a lot of debts and they still want to file bankruptcy. That's what the change has designed to prevent. The law now makes it a little bit harder for high-income, high-net-worth individuals to file bankruptcy. But for ordinary folks and small business owners, when they really are, you know, come across hard times, that doesn't mean that they are not going to be, able to file bankruptcy. I mean, in fact, the number of people who have filed since the change in the law is significantly higher than people who filed before the change in the law. So it's not, obviously every person's case is different. But, you know, it really depends on how high somebody's income is, their net worth, et cetera. But net worth, I'm not talking about retirement saving, et cetera. I'm talking about perhaps, you know, equity in their home, equity in their rental property, savings that are outside of retirement savings, et cetera. But folks, you know, most people who I have come across and helped, they're not those type of individuals who want to take advantage of the option. You know, 99% of clients I have worked with and talked to, they can use the option to help their situation. Even some of them who have fairly high income. It just depends on each person's case and circumstances. And that's why I think it's important to talk with an attorney and find out, you know, based on what options exist, based on their circumstances, their income, their life, you know, instead of just automatically writing off, I don't think that's an option that I can use because I have too much income, because that's not necessarily true.
No, and I like that. And, you know, right now with the way the home market is, you know, so many people are upside down in their homes, and they just, mm-hmm. you know, they either one, can you address the idea that so many people, you know, they don't have any equity, you know, they owe more than they own on their home. And it's mm-hmm. like for most small business owners, you know, in some cases they might have an SBA loan. It's like, I mean, address right. when should somebody walk away from their home? Because so many people struggle with the idea that they just, you know, I mean, I know somebody that sat in their house and they let it go to foreclosure. You know, mm-hmm. they had a second on their home. It's like they, right. You just see so many scenarios. I mean, talk about the home. When should somebody
Believe it or not, banks, lenders view foreclosure much more negatively than bankruptcy. So, and not to mention that if the house goes into foreclosure, there might be tax consequences that they might not be aware of, mm-hmm. you know, if they didn't go through bankruptcy, if the house went into foreclosure, they will be saddled with potential taxes that they are not going to be able to later eliminate if they want to do bankruptcy later. But as far as houses are concerned, you know, every person's attachment level and you know, because it's not just black and white economics. At home, there are, people's investment, people's children have grown up in a home that, yeah. you know, there are sentimental value to the home as well. So I never tell anyone that, this is the time you should walk away from your home. But sometimes, you know, look at a situation, if a person is paying significantly more, on the house than what the house is worth, and they don't have a lot of extra income to allow them to do that, and they, in order to continue to make the payment on the house, they have to cut back on other things such as, you know, their children's education or their own education or their business. You know, that's the time when a person should really do the math and then take the emotion out of the situation and look at the situation as, if this were a business, what would I do?
And I think that's the hardest piece to do. So, you know, I mean, I think getting people to pick up a phone and call you, someone mm-hmm. like you, is one of the first steps. I mean, what do you take right. somebody through when they first call you? I mean, it's embarrassing, you know,
sure.
there's pride,
absolutely.
All of that. What do you do when someone picks up the phone and calls you?
Any conversation with me is completely confidential, whether they know me or not. you know, nothing that they tell me is ever going to be repeated. So they can feel very, very safe in that respect that, you know, nothing that they share with me will, you know, go to ever be leaked to a third party. And also my initial consultation is free of charge. What I do is I meet with a potential client and gather the necessary information for me to, you know, analyze and make a recommendation for their case based on their specific circumstances. That sometimes might or might not even involve bankruptcy, but that I can provide some suggestions and recommendations on, hey, maybe you can try this route, maybe you can try that route. Maybe bankruptcy might not even be, you know, the best option for you in this particular case because A, B, and C. So, you know, I do think there is a lot of advantage in speaking with, you know, an attorney, whether it's me or not. Well, hopefully somebody who's honest, because not a lot of attorneys do what I do, which is to go through the different options with them and put the client's interest first. Because actually a lot of bankruptcy attorneys out there, when they initially meet with clients, their goal is to just, you know, get the client understand the process of bankruptcy and get them to file.
Yeah.
You know, so it's almost like a sale of service, sale of service or product. Whereas in my case, I built my practice based on, you know, it's not sales. It's more of, you know, making sure that it's the best thing for my client.
And, you know, like I said, this is where I have to give you a third-party endorsement, because I've been on the receiving end of hearing good things about you where you took it very personally with the individual. I mean, I actually went out before we had our interview today, and I kind of, like, made a list of some of the things I've heard from some of the small business owners, whether these are real or not, and I wanted to ask you about them. Like, you know, one client of mine who lost their job, started a business, and then right before the downturn of the economy had started something that was, you know, really kind of a consumer, nice-to-have kind of business where they were selling products. And so they got killed. And so they're upside down in their house. Can somebody keep their house and file for bankruptcy? That's,
absolutely,
I think, their question.
Absolutely.
And what would be the circumstances for that?
Well, first of all, you know, in that situation, if there are other debts to be canceled in bankruptcy, you know, the bankruptcy can help canceling and discharge those debts. But as far as the house is concerned, if their primary goal is to keep the home in bankruptcy, they absolutely can do that. But once the bankruptcy case is filed, they would have to continue to make payments on the mortgage. So just because somebody has filed for bankruptcy doesn't mean that they can keep their home and not make payments, because the lender still has a security interest in the home, meaning that even after bankruptcy, you know, the bank cannot pursue the borrower individually to repay the mortgage, but they can go after the home. They can still foreclose on the home if they don't pay. So if an individual is interested in, you know, eliminating all the unsecured debts like credit card debts or line of credits and business loans, but want, you know, the main objective is to keep their home, they can absolutely do that, as long as they are able to continue to make payments on their mortgage after filing for bankruptcy.
And I get the sense, you know, you alluded to this, it's like it's a lot of the if then this, isn't it? It's really very personal and central to somebody's situation.
Right.
Let me do this, because I think there'll be people that will call you. It's like, where can somebody get a hold of you if they would like to contact you and have a private conversation? Do you mind sharing your phone number and your email address?
Sure. My phone number is 858-633-0171. And I have two offices, one in Bankers Hill near downtown and another office in Carmel Valley in North County. So,
and we're talking about San Diego.
Yeah, Carmel Valley.
Can you do a phone call with somebody to determine if they should file for bankruptcy, or do you have to have them come into your office?
I prefer, you know, in person meetings rather than over the phone because, first of all, like I said, I go through the process of gathering the needed information. So it's not always possible to do that on a phone because my clients come in, and by the time they come in, they have already filled out a small questionnaire, so that I will have the information I need to consult with them and advise them. Most of the time when I'm talking to people over the phone, I don't have, that kind of information available to me.
Right. No, and I want to give you another scenario. I had a small business owner that, was in one of my classes, and so not a homeowner, but they had a lot of credit card debt, just all unsecured. And his comment to me was, he said, well, why should I file for bankruptcy? He goes, bankruptcy stays on my credit history for 10 years. He goes, I stopped paying my credit cards quite a few years ago. And he goes, I'll just rent it out for 7 years. So I'm kind of curious what you think about not filing and just letting things ride. I mean, is that true that it's like after 7 years, it's like all that stuff will just fall off if it's unsecured?
Not necessarily. Not necessarily, because the lender, without filing, the lender always retains the legal right to pursue the borrower to collect on that debt. So, by not filing, basically, that weight of the debt that you shoulder, it's still there. It's not all, and it prevents that person from truly starting over.
Mm-hmm. Just kind of curious. It's funny what the mindset is out there because, people will think that, I know as a former commercial banker, people didn't have a good understanding of how long a bankruptcy would stay on your credit record. But yet, clearing the decks and cleaning the house, it's like, some lenders will be forgiving, or at least used to, where then, a few years later, you can start to build your credit again. I mean, what I've seen.
And
you see that too?
Right. And bankruptcy also allows people to rebuild their credit right away. And in some cases, in some of my clients' cases, their credit score actually go up within, 12 months of filing for bankruptcy. Whereas somebody who doesn't file, they have no opportunity to rebuild their credit. And also in 7 years, they don't know what circumstances, what things will change in the future that will make them regret for not having filed for bankruptcy, 7 years ago. Because A, it's still on their credit, and at that time, maybe their income has improved, and they want to now acquire assets like buying a home or doing other things, and with their damaged credit from just not filing and not having filed for bankruptcy, they're not able to do those things, and maybe at that time, bankruptcy is no longer an option for them, and so it's going to take them a much, much longer time to potentially rebuild, if ever.
We haven't talked about this because I think some people, don't know what the cost is. I mean, what does it, just on average, to file for bankruptcy, how much does it cost? I mean, I'm not even sure anymore what it costs.
Sure. So it depends on whether a case is a Chapter 7, Chapter 13. The Chapter 7 bankruptcy is the straight liquidation, the straight bankruptcy where all the debts are canceled within about 4 months period. That's the option to pursue if a person's income is low and doesn't have a whole lot of assets, besides retirement. And then Chapter 13 is a more complex bankruptcy option that's more for higher income individuals. So the debts are not canceled and discharged right away, but rather reorganized into a 3 to 5 year repayment plan. So it really depends on whether the case is 7 or 13 and how complicated a case might be. Somebody who owns a business, someone who owns several rental properties in addition to their home, it makes the case more complicated. And especially if the person's income is very high. It's not doable, but it could make the case more complicated as well.
Okay.
So for a Chapter 7 case, you know, it can go anywhere from $1,500 to $5,000 or sometimes even $10,000, depends on how complicated the case is. I have done, you know, Chapter 7 cases for business entities. So that's the higher end, not individuals, but business entities. So that makes it more complicated. But for individuals, mostly it's between, you know, $1,500 to maybe $5,000. And then Chapter 13 is anywhere between $3,600 to about $5,000.
Gotcha. No, that's good information for folks. And then do people, you know, when people come to you, if they're, you know, kind of light on money and cash flow, how do you work with them when the fees might be $5,000? It's like, do you work out a payment plan with people, or what do you do to...
Well, in Chapter 13 case, actually a lot of the attorney's fees can be paid in the repayment plan. So the folks don't have to come, you know, pay the attorney's fees all up front. It can be paid over the 3 to 5 year period in the repayment plan. So the attorney will be grouped in as one of the creditors to receive repayment from the plan, if that makes
any
sense.
It does. Yeah. No, it does. So, I mean,
So that relieves a lot of the pressure and the burden from people who have to pay a lot of that fees upfront. Now, for Chapter 7, that option is not available, but, you know, most people don't pay the $5,000 fee unless, you know, they have a lot of assets, they have a high income, and they, you know, they have a business. So, you know, the fee usually is not a problem for them because, you know, they have the money. And for the lower end, it's $1,500. And if that is still difficult for folks, I absolutely set up payment plans for clients.
And I think it's worth kind of pointing out here that's like, you know, you're not an attorney that just specializes in bankruptcy, which some of these mills and, you know, specialists are. It's like you do other things for business. You do corporate law. You do transactional work. Is that correct? I mean, share some of the other services you provide besides just bankruptcy.
Absolutely. You know, I work with a lot of business owners in setting up their businesses, review and draft contracts, negotiate commercial leases, represent them in purchase and sale of existing businesses. I pretty much do everything on the transactional side for the business. And that also helps me in working with business owners when they're struggling financially and considering bankruptcy, because I understand the both aspects of the business.
And do you find that there's just, I mean, has bankruptcy and the consideration of that been just something that's crazy in terms of what people are approaching you for of recent, you know, kind of the last year, or do you finding that trend is kind of backing off a bit? You know, we keep hearing the economy is starting to come around. What kind of trends do you see with what, you know, people are doing in terms of bankruptcy or filings or that kind of stuff for their homes?
Well, I do feel that most people pursue this option or even think about pursuing this option is when something, you know, triggered them into doing so, such as, you know, they receive a notice of foreclosure sale in the mail from their lender, or if they receive the lawsuits from a credit card company that they're suing them. So in most cases, people don't... you know, don't just, even though they need to, and for a lot of reasons that, you know, we had discussed earlier, they don't really make the step of contacting an attorney or even pursuing that option. And lately, the trend I've seen is that banks are not really moving forward with foreclosing. Because of backlog, because of other reasons, maybe it's the election year, you know, for many reasons that I'm not entirely aware of, but those are certainly two of the reasons that I've heard from my colleagues and attorneys who represent banks is that they're not really moving forward with foreclosing on homes, especially with the election year. You know, the our president does not want the bad, you know, image out there that people are losing their home. So as a result of that, not many people are filing for bankruptcy. So we have seen a definite drop and that in the bankruptcy filing. But can I really attribute that to the improving our economy? I'm not entirely sure.
It's a slippery slope, isn't it? I mean, and
yeah.
I know it's the things you mentioned as far as, you know, people avoid it, don't want to. We're on the kind of like last 60 seconds here, Cecilia. I mean, what are two or three suggestions that you would give people, you know, if they've even got a modicum, you know, question in their mind? Is it just reaching out? What would you recommend to people, you know, based on their financial situation?
I definitely recommend people, if this is something that they're considering, or even they are just struggling, they don't even have to consider bankruptcy. If they are, you know, something is keeping them up at night, that they feel uneasy about their finances, pick up the phone and call me. You know, they might not have to go through the entire consultation process. If it's a quick question that maybe I can answer for them really quickly, I will be happy to do that. That's what I do for anybody, especially members of CWI. So, you know, I hope that people don't have any fear in picking up the phone and call me, because, you know, I built my practice based on that. I want to be accessible and generous with my time.
And you do. And I will say, it's like, you know, and it's also who people know. I mean, you have a conversation with somebody and maybe they allude to, it's like they're struggling financially or they've got questions. I mean, it's just so amazing to watch somebody who's gone from, it's like, you know, concerned, struggling, lots of questions on their mind. And it's like, you know, I mean, my God, you know, talking to you will make things clear of what their next step should be. And I think
Absolutely.
That's what we're trying to get across, is just, you know, find out the facts, and then, you know, then you can make your next steps and decisions. And
right.
Gosh, I can't thank you enough for your time. Unless there's one other little piece of advice you'd like to share with anybody, I'll give you that, and then
yeah,
we got to wrap up.
Yeah, I actually just want to, one thing is that people might not be aware of is that, you know, you had mentioned that a lot of folks whose house is underwater have second mortgage. The Chapter 13 bankruptcy actually allows folks to eliminate their second mortgage entirely if their property value, their current property value is worth less than how much they owe on the first mortgage. So that's something to think about and be aware of.
I think that there are so many scenarios. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
House worth less than first mortgage. And if there is a second mortgage, that's something that they want to consider.
All right. On that note, I got to wrap up. But thank you so much for your time. I think we might
You're
be
welcome.
Doing this
thank
one again, Cecilia.
Me.
Oh, you got it, girl. Folks, that's our show for today. Thank you to our listeners. I also want to say, you know, it's been my pleasure to be your host today. I hope you'll listen in next week to Women Leading the Way Radio at 9 a.m. next Monday. Happy Columbus Day to everybody, and everyone have a good week that's working this week. Thanks again, Cecilia.
Thank you.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused, business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.